SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a fine mess, isn't it?
The world's a mess.
You know what I wish, though? I wish the world would just go away. Just for a little bit.
You don't own me. I'm not your property. So take a shifty little beady eye love of me.
This is a marriage proposal?
Yep. So, what do you say?
Welcome to Eyes on Gilead, a weekly podcast dedicated to The Handmaid's Tale. There is a lot going on in this show, and we think it helps to talk it out after every episode. I'm Fiona Williams, and when I'm not doing this, I'm head of curation at SBS On Demand, and I'm joined, once again, by my colleagues, friends, and fellow resistors. Natalie Handley, Managing Editor at SBS Voices.
Hello.
Hayley Island, Channel Manager of SBS On Demand.
Hi.
And Sana Kadar, host of ABC Radio National's All in the Mind.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey. This season's going way too quickly. We have just watched episode 9, if you can believe it, of season 5 of The Handmaid's Tale. And it's the penultimate episode of season 5. Outrageous. Anyway, it's called Allegiance. And it was written by Eric Tuckman and directed by Bradley Whitford. Perhaps you've heard of him. June and Luke prepare for a rescue mission.
Luke Bancol, June Osborne. May I introduce Commander Elijah Vance?
Sir, it's an honor. Ma'am?
Commander.
Serena experiments with new tactics to have it all.
Mrs. Wheeler, certainly I will pump for next time.
Indeed. So let's get into this one and say what stood out for each of us. Let's go around the room. Sana, I'm going to start with you. What stood out for you this week?
Well, I debated whether or not to go with this one because it's an unserious pick, you know, for fear of judgment, but I'm going to go with it anyways. My highlight was Hottie Elijah. Don't judge. I know this is a very serious show with very serious themes, but this week, you know, wow, he was gorgeous and he had one very powerful line or a couple of very powerful lines. But the second he said, my aim is to come home to my daughter, I was like, there it goes. He ain't coming home.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought the exact same thing, that Hazel Eye Dreamboat is not coming back.
He was beautiful.
He was beautiful. Fun fact that he is Brendan Morgan and he was a Canadian bachelor. Bachelor in Paradise last year.
Oh, yes. Stop. Really?
Oh my goodness.
That makes so much sense now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, look at him moving up in the world. I'm happy for him.
And all the symbols in this episode, like everyone's talking about being a symbol. Commander, good kind of commander. Yes. Elijah Vance was certainly a symbol. And yes, it clearly had an impact on the team.
I have to go watch The Bachelor Canada now.
Bachelor in Paradise last year. So, all right, who's going to top that one?
No one can follow that. Forget it.
Hayley, you're up. What stood out for you this week?
My highlight was Hannah writing Hannah.
Aww.
That's it.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I know.
Because
yeah.
It means so much. It means that she hasn't forgotten who she is and, you know, where she comes from. And, yeah, that was definitely my highlight.
Yeah. Hannah in all caps and underlined as well. Yeah.
I swear that was one of mine too. I'm not totally flippant.
But back to Elijah.
exactly.
Natalie, what stood out for you?
Well, following Elijah, how do we not say the Nick and June reunion? That has to be up there with Nick saying everything. It was actually such a rom-com moment for me with like a beautiful background and him saying all the romantic things. And so, yes, that is going to be a standout moment for me this episode.
I get you, Nat. It was actually the close like second highlight right under Hannah writing Hannah. I've got written down my notes was June's post-Nick smile.
Yeah.
Aww, that's
very
nice.
Close second.
It was a very lovey smile.
Interesting. All right. I didn't have any of that kind of feeling about that scene, but okay. I know I've made stupid theories in the past. This one really happened. I'm not suggesting it's like the bridge kiss, but I didn't. I'm not going to go there with this, but yeah. No, I think he Yeah, anyway, we'll get to that.
Ooh, okay.
No. I mean, nothing major, but yeah, I think he burned his bridge. He's Gilead through and through. I don't think it was a smile.
Yes, that's what I thought too, actually. But yes, we can talk about that when we get there.
I did notice all the hands. I mean, this show is all about showing hands and, you know, by his hand and by her hand, etc. Everyone's very handsy this this episode. You know, hands on shoulders, Mrs. McKenzie on Rose and
yeah.
Lawrence on his fiance, Naomi. And Alanis, of course, on Serena. Yeah, a lot going on. Boom. Yes. So that's not a very fully formed thought there, but just everyone being handsy. So let's move on. We open in the hangar under the banner of the American flag with the doors opening. It's full of promise. You know, we've found Hannah. She's in Colorado Springs at a former U.S. Air Force Academy that's just been repurposed as a wife school. So she and her fellow plums are there. And some friendly, wink, wink, has given to Ello the intel. And it sounds like an amazing mission. Drop in, drop out, get 30 of the kidnapped kids. Sounds great if it plays out like that, doesn't it? But
I didn't know how they were, like, going to specifically just get the kids that were stolen. Like, they were very specific about that. And I thought, how? How are they actually going to do that? Anyway, we never actually got to that point though, yeah. Did we?
Also, yeah, well, no. Interestingly, in that scene, they're in an airport hangar, but we never once see a fighter jet. I don't know if the budget perhaps didn't allow, you know, allow for a plane there, but we never actually saw any planes in the entire scene. So perhaps they were never going to go.
we heard it and, yeah, saw the Situation Room. But
yeah,
I was thinking, you know, across this whole series, June's been looking for an army. You know, she's been trying to find what is my army, and now she's got the military might behind her. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you can see how that plays out. But careful what armies you wish for or you have allegiances with. So there's a lot of that Eye of God shot across this episode, but more when obviously June adopts that position in the later scene. But before that, we're off to the Wheelers. Serena is becoming a photo op again. Noah is her prop, or maybe Serena's the prop. Either way, both of them are props. And, yeah, it's all starting to play out here with Alanis, played by Genevieve Angelson, who's doing a very good job.
She's, isn't she?
Ugh. Yeah, she was actually my second highlight. Like, she is – who knew that we could get a more annoying, horrible, but amazing wife villain than Serena? Like, she's actually fantastic to watch.
Yeah, she's studied the Serenas of the world, and, yeah, she's bringing – this forceful charm, a little bit Reese Witherspoon-y. I don't know.
Yeah, she's like a, yeah. Very tightly wound, like a very A-type kind of, I don't know, crazy coming through.
Mm, yeah, just that all those threatening niceties, there's that veneer of it that she can barely break through, but obviously she does later. But, yeah, the ordering Serena to use the bottle instead of breastfeeding, my smart little boy.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, mm-hmm. I know.
It's not even passive aggression anymore, is it?
It's just, no, yeah. It's aggression. Yeah. A couple of things to mention on color in this episode. In this scene, they both of them, as they're having it out about bottle versus breast, they're in a room that's very much the Handmaid's red. Mm. But when the camera is on Serena, the room behind her is the wife teal. So it's very much like representing, you know, her past life, you know, where she used to be directly behind her. But interestingly, when we get to the scene a little bit later, quite a bit later, where she's going to visit Ryan Wheeler in his study, she's walking away from a room that's the Handmaid's red into his study, which is kind of washed in the teal. So it's sort of the opposite of what's happening in the breast bottle scene. Oh, but what's significant about that, nice. I thought, was it kind of foreshadows what's about to come at the end of the episode. And I only made this connection sort of after watching the episode. So she had teal wife behind her, her past behind her in the earlier scene. And then in this Ryan Wheeler scene, she's walking away from the Handmaid's red into the wife colors. And that's kind of like, by the end of the episode, she's running away from her handmaid role, you know, making a break from freedom. So it's very minor, but I wondered if like that was part of foreshadowing she was about to leave the handmaid red behind properly.
Yeah, right. Good pickup.
Yeah, that's a nice pickup.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm going to go rewatch it.
I feel like I've, like, stopped clocking all the colours.
Yeah.
Because like, each scene just seems to be awash with various colors.
I agree.
That are really symbolic in the series. But you're right. That totally feels like it's intentional.
Yeah. No, I sort of stopped clocking it after a while too, because everything's just either teal or red, really. But the way these were positioned and the way she was moving and where the colors were in relation to Serena, I thought was communicating something.
Mm. Yeah, good one.
Nice.
In this one, I was less looking for the colors. I was looking at Serena's outfits and just noticing how, you know, how beautifully and exquisitely tailored she has been.
Yeah.
Not so much now. Like even the wifely dress that she had on for the photo shoot, the collar was a little not quite as schmick as the Gilead tailoring normally is. And then the peppermint, I guess, outfit, you know, like just it's not the, they're not sending their best clothes for Serena.
She's a little bit frumpy, but she's a breastfeeding mum. Like she needs the open loose collars to, you know, get quick access. Mm. But yeah, you're right.
And then the next scene is Lawrence and Lydia and the proposal. Mm.
Tea?
No, thank you. But please have some yourselves.
That god-awful proposal, wasn't it great?
Who saw that coming? I did not.
That could have been a highlight as well, actually. Yeah. Naomi saying, is this a proposal? That was such a great line.
It was. And his response is, yep, yep. So what do you say? Yeah, look, where do you start with this? I don't know. I love that she comes in thinking that she's going to be sent off to the colonies, you know, and then they're just like, don't be ridiculous. It could have very realistically gone that way. But she's terrified, and then suddenly it's the least romantic proposal known to man. But
she also pivots really quickly. Like, these, like, commander's wives just give me whiplash, you know? Like, on the one hand, she thinks that she's about to go to the colonies, and as soon as she realizes that she isn't, all of a sudden, she's just imagined herself in a fancy suburb in a nice apartment. And it's like, okay.
Maybe a nice condo in Brookline or Back Bay?
For Pete's sake, we're not your realtors.
Go you!
In that case, yeah. I mean, you have to keep your wits about you, though, in Gilead, so you have to be prepared for anything.
Yeah, I think Naomi Putnam is legitimately terrified in this scene, though, and she asks that question at the end, do I have a choice in this? And Lydia and Lawrence are like, of course, think it over. But if I was Naomi, I would be thinking that I don't have a choice in this. So it was interesting kind of seeing it from Lawrence's side, where it's a little bit awkward and that's it. But yeah. I think Naomi's terrified.
But it made me think about because what are her options? And, you know, Gilead needs like a Tinder or something where she can see who the available up-and-coming commanders are. And I thought, that's kind of Lydia. She's like the matchmaker of Gilead.
Mm-hmm. She might have binders of men.
Yes. Yep. Yes. But like this for me, look, all of Bradley Whitford's scenes are always enjoyable because he gets such great lines and delivers them so well. But he was in a way that we haven't seen him before. Like, he was like properly ruffled, I think is maybe the word I'll use. Like he was very uncomfortable and nervous. And like he's always kind of bossing Lydia around, right? But this time he was actually genuinely appreciative and thanking her for being there. And I thought, wow, we have not seen you like this before, which brings me to the fact that he actually directed the episode. And look, I don't know what that's like to be an actor and sort of direct yourself, because I would imagine, like if it was me, I would imagine that I would choose an episode which I was hardly in. But to think that like he's directing an episode where not only is he in it like a lot, yeah, we're also seeing him behave and do things that we haven't seen before. So that sounds incredibly difficult to me. So hats off to Bradley Whitford.
Yeah, I think you still see the bravado, and he brings that kind of aloofness that is his kind of modus operandi in Gilead. But behind closed doors, you can see him hovering behind the door, hearing Naomi speak truthfully to Lydia, like he had Warren killed right in front of me. But he loses that bravado when he's away from them. And, yeah, this whole thing is interrogating Eleanor and her impact on him, his guilt about the way that their relationship disintegrated because of his own actions and her resentment for that. So good point. This is a great episode to handle with for the character that you've played to date, and yeah, just showing what he's really like, hovering behind the door of his office listening to people talk about.
No, he was so nervous about it.
When Naomi says he had my husband killed in front of me, it struck me that this scene was very Game of Thronesy in a way, because Lawrence is now trying to take the wife of the man he killed, the guy who he was sparring with for power beforehand, and now he's going to take his widow and his child. Like, it just felt very like a medieval exchange of goods kind of happening here. Mm-hmm. And just a little bit gross as well.
Yeah, extremely. But by the end, looks like she's come around to the idea. Well, you know, such the choice, such as it was.
Mm. Well, I could say, like, that's what I found really funny about it, actually, was how different Naomi and Serena are, because Lawrence, Joseph Lawrence had a hand in Fred's death. Serena knew about it, but she was really trying to become Mrs. Joseph Lawrence, whereas, like, Naomi is kind of in a very similar, like, situation, and she doesn't want to have a bar of it. And just made me think that Naomi and Joseph Lawrence, they're really not matched, you know? They are not intellectually matched in any way at all. And I know, Fiona, that you had predicted that maybe Lawrence will die by the end of the season. And I'm really hoping he sticks around, because I just want to see how this terrible marriage plays out.
Well, maybe that's partly why he chose Naomi as opposed to Serena as well. Maybe Lawrence didn't want an intellectual match, you know? He is another weak man who can't stand a strong woman, I'm sure, so.
I don't think we've seen all of Naomi yet. You know, like she's, she was scheming a little bit with Serena there, trying to intimate she would take a baby. But, yeah, that was great seeing them and seeing, you know, another side of her that we haven't seen before. Mm. Good stuff. All right. On to the Wheelers, to that nighttime visit that Serena pays to Ryan. Not to play Scrabble, this one she's putting her bottles in the fridge and then trying on the charm, which he calls out, you know, he's sufficiently butted up. What do you want? And here again, there's mentions of symbols. There's a lot of scenes where someone's mentioned as being a symbol or whatnot, and she's putting herself forward, arguing why she needs a place at the almost open fertility centre. That was her idea. So the world needs to see the mighty Mrs. Waterford and her progeny.
Which was a good pitch, apparently. And I think what I'm kind of learning from these moments with Serena and the Wheelers, speaking of marriages, they clearly don't talk, because Alanis keeps getting surprised by Serena going behind her back and talking to her husband. And I thought, geez, like, he's really not keeping her in the loop, is he?
No, he is not. No, they are not communicating. They barely look each other in the eye. Or he gets a glare later on when he makes the point about Noah's duration. Yes. I think that's the first eye contact they've had in a long time. Yes. But clearly it works, because she's going to get off to the opening.
Well, one thing this reminds me of, I think Alanis said it in the first argument with Serena. She said, my husband doesn't answer to those commanders in Gilead. Yes. And yes. I thought, if he doesn't, then who the hell is he really? We have a lot more to learn about Mr. Ryan Wheeler. We're still not clear on what his relation is to Gilead proper. Yeah, I found that really interesting. It piqued my interest.
Yes, that was quite an interesting line to drop in the episode, wasn't it? Because I thought, I wonder how that's going to play out. And it sounds like he could be going rogue.
Yeah.
Well, it's Gilead property, isn't it? Because that's what Serena has to live on as part of her deal. So they're living on that, but he doesn't answer to them, and he's got his black ops cross-border outfit going on.
But he's involved in the fertility center opening. So there's, like, you know, there's a lot of Gilead involvement, clearly, but why does he not answer to
100%.
Them?
He's probably financing it.
Right.
And so part of Serena buttering him up was Gilead could have used men like you in those early days to avoid those missteps. Never mind Fred's memory, but yes. Yes. And his praise be, she says praise be, and he says, oh, yeah. He doesn't have the lingo down either. They're very un-Gileadian Gileadians. Mm.
Did we miss over, by the way, his funny line of when she says, do you have a moment? And he's like,
you're going to shoot me?
You're going to shoot me?
Is he our Canadian Lawrence, our sarcastic Canadian Lawrence?
Yes.
He does have this layer of self-awareness that his wife definitely doesn't. And it does seem at times in this episode that he is siding with Serena, you know, on a certain level, like the comments he makes to her in that room, letting her go to the information center. And definitely that line, Fiona, where he kind of insinuates that the baby will determine how long the feed takes, not Mrs. Wheeler.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like the story of always with Gilead. The husbands were always a little bit lax or had a bit of leeway to either go to Jezebel's or, you know, acknowledge the absurdity of their surrounds, whereas the women, whether for their own survival or whether for their own true belief, just like we're completely, fully, fundamentally believing, you know, everything and going along with it.
Yeah. The title of this episode is Allegiance as well. So there's all the little ways that you can see who's siding with who. I'm sure Alanis as well has well across little Ryan's diversions into Serena's side. Would love to be a fly on the wall when she bolts out the back and they notice it. But anywho, down to the Situation Room for the raid. It's 12:45. June and Luke are there because June rightly made the point it's all happening because of the intel that they got. But anyway, June, she takes the Eye of God position that we're normally seeing as viewers, but now she's got one of Hannah as the plums are all saying their prayers and getting off to their makeshift bedrooms.
They're very cozy little tents. I quite liked that.
Yeah, but it's like a panopticon with the
not that part
aunt in the middle just surveying them all.
Totally.
Well, I really enjoyed the fact that it was the eye has come back because I haven't really noticed that. Like a lot of the times in the show, we would see an eye and it might be down a stairwell. I think last season it was in the layout of all the refugees having their therapy circle. And so this time all of the plums' beds were all in the shape of an eye. And I thought, oh, the eye has come back this season. And look, I hope I haven't missed it in the previous episodes, but I enjoyed seeing it this time.
Yeah, that one, you couldn't miss that, could you? The way they were set up, they looked like wagon trains to me. Like, they looked like the bonnets on Westerns in Pioneer days, little oldie-worldy look about them. But, yes, and there's that hopeful suggestion through editing that they're making some sort of connection by she's looking up and June's looking down and there's some sort of connection in their thoughts and prayers. A little reminiscent of last week when they were mirrored on the garden beds and, you know, June looking up at night and Hannah looking up in the daytime. There's some sort of metaphysical connection they still share if they can't be together because they certainly aren't together because of this scene. But, yes, Hannah's picture book keeps the secret, as you revealed, Haiti.
How and why does she have a pencil?
Yeah.
Are the rules changing? Are things getting a bit more lax?
Had she maybe snuck it in because she was, you know, kept looking up like she was, you know, obviously doing something she wasn't meant to. So I wondered if maybe it was contraband.
Yeah, it wasn't very concealed though. I thought maybe for drawing. Like I thought maybe drawing's allowed, but I don't know. What do you learn at wife school?
Am I forgetting a detail or was there significance in the card that she had torn that she wrote on that had the little flower drawing on it?
I wondered about that too.
Something from before?
I don't know if it's from before, but I think the garden and the flower, that's the bond she shares with June. You know, June's flowering so furiously. she's putting, you know, making things grow and putting down roots in Canada. And I think that, you know, they both love gardening and it carries on. I don't know, but that's one take I took.
Yeah.
Yes, and it all goes to shit. The Gilead intercepts it. There was terrible intel. Thanks, Lawrence. And probably thanks, Nick, too, Mr. Defence, don't we think?
A little bit of Mackenzie in there as well.
Yeah, big time. So we hardly knew you, Elijah, but it's all planes down, all three planes down, no survivors. It's terrible.
I mourned Elijah.
Yeah, yeah. This for me is June's first heartbreak of the episode. I think she has two heartbreaking moments. And this is the first one. And I guess the downside, you know, of claiming to be in the room when it happens because you were the one that brought the intel. If you're going to take that level of responsibility, then when it all goes wrong, you're also going to take that level of responsibility. So, yeah, it's quite an awful moment all round.
One thing that occurred to me in this episode is that I think I've probably thought this before, but I remembered it, is we have no sense of who the leadership is of both the U.S. and Gilead. Like, we know the Boston group. We don't know who's top dog in D.C., if D.C. still is indeed, you know, the capital of Gilead. But for America, all we ever see is Tuello. Who is his president? Who is he? You know, we have no sense of this. In all the communications and all the memorials, it's just completely absent.
I'm really hoping it's Oprah, actually. So as long as we don't find out, then that's what's in my mind.
Okay, we'll leave it an unknown and we can keep pretending it's Oprah.
Yeah, she needs to do another broadcast. But I guess this comes out later with Tuella's conversation with June, but it, you know, mention of Oprah and whatnot, it does strike me that June's never done press and there's been no interest in her as a symbol, but I guess that's what Tuella's agitating for her to do. But I've always thought that's more Serena's game, I guess. June's just dealing with trauma and trying to get her back. She's not interested in the broader aims, but I think they're kind of suggesting, and we might see more of that next season.
Yeah.
Wait, maybe even next episode.
Yeah, there was a lot of thinking about the PR game and who will play what role for, you know, the various sides' aims.
But in the aftermath of Operation Get Hannah, Lawrence calls. Flip phone is got an incoming call, and hello? It's an apology, but is it?
I'm sorry.
I really am. All this bloodshed, it's exactly what I was trying to avoid.
But that's his kind of way of, he always regrets past terrible actions.
I think this is what I got wrong, like last episode, was I thought she was playing both sides and they didn't know about it. But but clearly what had happened, which I wasn't aware of, was that she had picked a side and Joseph knew about it. And he's annoyed because that she had backed America. So I thought that she was sneakily backing both and they kind of didn't know about it. But so clearly he actually knew exactly what her intentions were, that she was not going to go to New Bethlehem and that she instead was...
Did he?
Well, that's...
Well, to give the intel for them to let her call her to say we found her and that it's so, you know, something happened in between.
Right, okay, because I thought Lawrence only figured out, oh, she'd sided with the Americans once the planes were in the air heading for Hannah kind of thing.
No, he was involved in giving the fake information or, the intel.
Right.
Because he sent the disc, surely.
I missed this. That. Right, okay. This is just coming together
in my
head now.
We're piecing this together. I mean, it's, you know, this is our... Yeah. We didn't write it.
Yeah. How did he know? As anyone. How did he know? So she wouldn't have told him.
Yeah, I was wondering that too, because I just thought if the mission fails, then she still has the New Bethlehem offer, but she doesn't, you know? Like she had burned that bridge and I hadn't realised that she had. So the conversation was eliminating for that reason. But then, of course, wow, like this conversation, it takes a turn, doesn't it? Like I was actually wondering, curious to like get all your thoughts on like, is this... considering that she had called him a friend like a few episodes ago, which we're all annoyed by, I couldn't figure out whether this phone call was absolutely destroying any relationship they had after she really, because like the shocking moment for me when I think I gasped out loud was when she started talking about his wife and she hated you. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah. And so I'm kind of torn. I'm like, does that mean that that's it now? Like that relationship or friendship or alliance, allegiance, whatever the hell that was, is that all over now? But then this other part of me was like, they finally got rid of all the artifice, you know, like the fact that June did know about how his wife died and that she stood there and watched, that was always in between them because that was something that she had kept hidden. And they both got really vulnerable together. They were both crying together. And I thought, this is almost the beginning of an actual real friendship now rather than one that had too many lies in it. So, yeah, I'm not sure their future.
I thought it was the end of their relationship for now. You know, things flip back and forth in the show all the time, but for the moment, time being, this was them burning their bridges with each other.
Yeah, nothing's ever over yep. in this, but yeah, it's certainly a landmark moment. Yeah, the truth bombs are lobbed back and forth.
What June said to Lawrence was devastating for him, and we haven't really had a chance to see what the fallout of that will be yet, whether he'll be able to climb back from that. And yeah, the conversation that he has where he, you know, continues to dangle New Bethlehem and Nick at June and then push her even more by asking her to publicly condemn the US when, you know, if he had left it at that, like left it just before that and let her mull over it, who knows, maybe she would have come around to the idea. But I think as soon as he kind of pushes her that little bit more, that triggers her to really go, well, look, just let Hannah go. Like, I don't need to come to New Bethlehem. And then I think she finally realizes that he's only offering her New Bethlehem because it works for him. And I think that's when she realizes that it's not a friendship and tells him everything she wants to tell him about Eleanor. So, yeah, we haven't seen how he's going to react to that yet.
See, I was wondering if it was kind of a gift almost, all the stuff that she said about Eleanor, as devastating as it was for him to hear, because he was crying, you know, which we haven't seen before, I don't think, because maybe he had, the reason he hadn't remarried was because he was still feeling loyalty to his wife, whereas I think maybe that conversation or June just really saying how much that Eleanor actually despised him, has in some way freed him up to marry again.
Mm-hmm. Possibly. I feel like Eleanor is his kind of moral conscience where he might be lacking one. And I think he's said to June at the end of season three, I think it was, that he was going to stay in Gilead. He didn't want to escape with the Marthas. He was going to stay in Gilead because he had to clean up his own mess, and that's what Eleanor would have wanted him to do. So he's kind of there for Eleanor. So if this kind of devastating realization that she really did hate and despise what he had become hits him the wrong way, then he might be out of there. Who knows?
Yeah, I think it's a truth bomb that he wasn't expecting necessarily for someone to say to him, but I think it probably is the impetus for then, okay, fine, I'll finish what I started there with Naomi towards the end there where the hand goes on the shoulder and the rings on the finger. I do think all the references to Eleanor and how much she hated life there, I do love the way that segues into the Nick storyline with Rose, who loves it. And we maybe get to that in that scene, but yeah, the way that Nick is very much in Lawrence's image here, and there's a genuine conscience here. That the line that she uses on him is, well, he's saying that he's trying to fix it from the inside. Mm-hmm. And she says,
"You are one of them. It's even worse because I know you know better."
Mm-hmm. And he says,
"I'm doing what I can. Step by step, it's what I promised Eleanor."
So his whole way of working that we dealt with last week, last episode, yeah, she's calling him on it here. But, you know, Eleanor is that pull because she did not want any of this. And I think it does set up that contrast with Nick.
I think that Joseph Lawrence and June are similar in a way my reading is that they're both fighters, you know, I think this episode, what really came home to me actually was just how much of an activist June is. Like, she can't stop agitating for a better life and experience and outcome for all the girls in Gilead. And that will never stop, you know, this drive that she has to not only get Hannah back, but try and make things better. I think Joseph Lawrence would be kind of similar because, if he did manage to get out, if he did actually take that out and goes to Canada, I think he would feel useless. He would not be able to make the changes that he would want to make. I think he's got maybe the same drive as June does, which is to make change. So I can see why he's staying in Gilead and thinking that that would be the place to do it. But I did really enjoy June saying all of these things to him. It really was a great scene, this episode. And there were heaps of great scenes, you know, but that whole conversation was quite a standout.
Very much. And also June does make the line,
"I want my baby here, safe and free."
Which is interesting in the way that the episode ends, because it's not all that safe. It certainly doesn't appear to be staying all that free. But, they're showing the bleeding borders. And then she takes it all out on the garden. her rage she unleashes on that poor patch.
Well, for me, this episode was really, I feel like June's having a rebirthing moment and lots of things are coming to an end, but it's not over. It's just a restart, a reboot. And I think we see that with the garden, by the way, in a really silly way. We see it with the garden because all of those seeds that she planted, she's now destroying them. And I think that we'll start to see a rebirth. But I'll talk more about that when we get to the conversation with Nick.
Ooh, that's interesting because I saw the bashing up of the garden, the end of hope in this episode, because you plant a garden to cultivate stuff that's going to come in the future for beauty, for all these reasons. So a garden is very hopeful in a sense, and her going to town on it was symbolic of the end of hope of getting Hannah now.
Yeah, the garden is kind of like her connection with Hannah that we've seen over the last few episodes where they've both been gardening at the same time. So I kind of think I read it in a similar way, Sana, that what we saw of Hannah in this episode is the closest we're going to get to Hannah for a long time, if ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of hope or lack of it or disappearing, now we're at the Wheelers with Serena getting ready to get in the car with permission from Mr. Ryan Wheeler to go. And here's where Alanis lands that blow. Or twice, actually. It's a double one, isn't it?
How great is that? So this for me is because we're watching Serena get all of the punishments that she had meted out to June while June was in her house. And I thought we'd seen them all, you know, and then I realized Serena, she never actually struck June. She wanted to, but June was pregnant. So instead she slapped Rita. And I had actually kind of forgotten that until Alanis did her work. And I was like, oh, this was clearly on the list. If there was like a long list where you were keeping tally of all the things that like Serena did that she needs to have back, well, that was like still on it, which makes me think what is still on that list. But I think we might now be done. But yes, that slap was shocking, but also a little bit enjoyable, I have to say.
Yeah, it's a medley of Serena's greatest hits, pun sort of intended, probably. So she did throw June on the ground in the whole Do You Understand Me scene. Mm. Yeah, but not the slap.
She did hold her down while her husband raped her multiple times.
Oh, obviously, yes. Fair point, yes. Excellent point, in fact. Needs to be restated over and over. And this scene also when she says to me, you're just a whore, reminded me of, I think it's the finale of season one, where she throws the dress that June wore at Jezebel's back at her in the face. So, yeah, this it's all coming back in various ways.
When she called her a whore, I did wonder, in what way is Serena a whore? She was married when she had this, she got pregnant. Is a whore any woman that's not currently married in your mind? Like, what makes Serena a whore? Explain.
I think she's insinuating that going to see her husband at night while she wasn't around is akin to adultery. That's how
we're trying to explain the thought processes of Alanis Wheeler here. So it's like, for whatever reason, she thinks the way she does. And and that poor nanny, she doesn't have a character name, but she's played by Dorothy A. Adebong. And happily, she did not get the slap because in Canada it's not the Marthas who cop it. But, she's adopting a Rita-like energy, and you see Serena sort of clocks that a little bit later at the opening there when she takes responsibility for not bringing the bottle. But,
I assume she did actually bring the bottle and she was just lying, by the way.
Mm. I thought she purposely didn't bring the bottle for the very reason of being able to nurse him.
Yeah, I thought the same, Sana. I'm surprised she didn't check the bag.
Yeah, I was like, Alanis, if you're so tightly wound and so trying to control everything, why would you have not brought the bottle?
Yes, good point. And then it's the conversation with June and Tuello after the rage. Flags behind them. There's a lot of symbolism in this one, reflecting on terrible intel from terrible allies, frenemies across the border. So anyway, so yes, they've determined, well, June's saying she's done with that son of a bitch, Lawrence. So he says, what about Nick Blaine?
Well, it was like, she's really gung-ho, you know, and I think, as I said earlier, like that sort of activist side of June, you really see it in this episode, because despite the fact that her heart got broken when that mission failed, she doesn't give up, you know? What's next? She is putting it back on him to go, all right, you know, let's just like keep going. And then he puts it straight back on her, because what's next is basically she has to do something, and she's got two options. And one of them is Nick.
Yeah. And just on that need to keep going, like, she does reference the dead pilots, and, you know, they did all that because of the intel. You know, that's weighing heavily on her as well, that they lost their lives for a mission that she initiated to go and get Hannah. So, yeah, she kind of evokes their memory as a way to will herself forward, I think, as well. But, yeah, Nick, here's where she finds out he had the chance to come to Canada. Mm-hmm. And he said, thanks, but no thanks. That was a bit of a surprise for her.
This whole scene left me a little bit confused about Nick, because I was like, does Nick still actually believe in Gilead? Why does he care about making it better? We understand Lawrence's motivation for doing that, but why doesn't he just hit eject, get out, reject the whole thing wholesale? So there's a huge part of him that still, I think, believes in the mission without all the horrible stuff that went down. I don't know. What did you guys make of Nick after this?
Oh, right. Okay.
Oh, I think he's there because of love.
Rose.
He's in love with Rose. Stop it. I think he's in love with Rose. He's that kind of guy. He follows his heart.
I think, I don't know, people are complex, right? And I assume that both him and Lawrence are similar in that they're staying because they feel so horribly guilty that they actually don't deserve a happy ending. They don't deserve to get out of Gilead. So I feel like they can feel better about themselves if they actually choose to stay. And so that's why when Tuello had offered Nick that out, yeah, the impression that I got was that he didn't feel that he deserved to get everything his heart desired. But yes, I do think that his relationship with Rose is not just functional. They do actually seem to have the most marriage-like marriage I think we've seen so far in Gilead.
Yeah, they have the candor and the dynamic. Yeah, the like the asides when that Mrs. Calhoun makes her bitchy remark to her at the reception. I'm just going to say I only mentioned Nick's name and you've cut straight ahead to the scene with him. But let's go on.
Also, the idea that Nick's in love with Rose sets up this really nice mirroring of him and June, because they now both are in love with two different people in two different places, and they have a child in two different places each, or a, you know, pending child.
On the way, yep.
Which I think plays out nicely in the conversation that they have in this episode as well.
Yes. I will skip back a little bit to the Tuella conversation, because that sort of sets up the Nick chat, because it's there that when June does learn that he said no initially, then she's all in on having a meet-up with him, because that doesn't gel with the Nick that she thinks she knows, and she wants to test him. Off the back of that Lawrence conversation where she challenges him that, you know, you're a part of it, he demonstrates very much in their interaction that he is. He's all in at the moment. He doesn't want to leave.
I also want that offer from Tuella, the two options, and one of them is to go public, and she says that she's not ready for that. I thought that was a nice way that she is different from Serena, because that's all Serena wants, whereas June is in an amazing position to sort of take a very public role, and she really has not wanted to do that. So, yes, for multiple reasons, catching up with Nick right now seems really attractive. I didn't realize it was going to be in real life, by the way. I thought it was going to be a phone call.
Yeah. But on that point about Tuella urging June to more, I didn't think of it as a publicity kind of way, like power, I thought, like as a force, because he references Nick.
Nick was an eye. He's a commander now. Someone like that defecting from Gilead. Big impact. You can make one too. You could. You know that. After Angel's flight, after your testimony against Waterford, you should step up. Put your power to use.
And that's what she says she doesn't feel comfortable about. I didn't think it as necessarily, like, I thought more as an agent, more as a political kind of a force, which would set her in direct conflict with Nick.
As in maybe Tuella wants to send her into New Bethlehem.
Ooh. Ooh. I didn't go that far with it, but sure, maybe. Yeah, more like as a symbol, like it's more of an architect. I don't know, something a bit more than a public face. I don't know. I read more as a political power in that he's urging there. I thought that's probably setting us up for maybe a storyline in season 6. I don't know. I'm clutching at straws, guys. Speaking of public personas, welcome to the Gilead Fertility Centre, or whatever the hell they're going to call it. The polite reception where Mrs. Frederick Waterford is parading her baby and encouraging, co-opting the hope of women who can't have children to try and get them on board with the Gilead way of life. Because if you clean with white vinegar, maybe you don't, maybe then you can get pregnant. I don't know.
Yeah. And the fertility center is like conspicuously devoid of any red. There's no insinuation that any of these women will end up handmaids. No way. Although I did think just before that, when Alanis said she was going to come to the event as well, I thought, oh gosh, Alanis is going to ruin this publicity stunt, because all the women there are just going to see, I might have a baby, but someone's going to be there to steal it at any point in time. So I thought, Alanis, you're about to bring this whole plan down. But Serena in that scene, it kind of made me hate her again, because I was like, you know now viscerally the worst of what Gilead can offer, and yet you're trying to recruit these women to enter this project, and you've just been called a whore. What do you think all these women are about to be called if they head into Gilead? Who's to say they're going to be treated as wives? I don't know. I just, oh, Serena, think of someone else other than yourself.
For someone who's feeling sort of like the full force of, well, not the full force, but, you know, getting a good dose of the experience of what it's like being a handmaid, she switched into promotion mode so easily, didn't she?
Yeah.
I was like, it's just like an autopilot.
Mm-hmm. I had this nasty feeling that she was exploiting that baby, and she's been so desperate to become a mother, and to see her so quickly flip into this kind of exploitation role as a mother was yuck.
Yep. Totally. It's all hashtag as a mother. Like, she was very much bringing that to that reception. And even the quote,
scrubbing all of those horrible toxins out of the environment, and above all, a devotion to God and living by the highest of moral standards. So if you follow Gilead's path in Toronto, then perhaps you too be blessed with a child of your
with
own.
With a child of your own. Or you can keep someone a prisoner in your house and take theirs, mm-hmm. like Alanis over there.
Mm. I will add, I said she viscerally knows what it's like to be a handmaid now. The one handmaid experience she has not had to go through is, you know, rape. So there is mm-hmm. one element of the handmaid's life that, you know, the worst element of it that she's blissfully unaware of right now.
Well, I was going to say, I reckon she's probably hyper aware of it because surely that's just next, you know, like.
That's true.
They seem to be, those wheelers seem to be enjoying all of the power of Gilead despite not being in it. So I can only assume that that is something that Wheeler will exercise somewhere in the near future.
I kind of hope we never see those rape scenes again. You know, I feel like in the early seasons, we kind of had to understand the horror of Gilead, but we kind of all understand it now. I really don't want to watch even, you know, like.
No, yeah, I don't think that we, you know, that we would, but it provides the impetus for why Serena does what she does.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. And like getting up the bravery in order to do that. Because if it fails, then she's fucked, you know, like that's, she yeah. would, it wouldn't actually work and she wouldn't be able to be with Noah. So it is a very brave thing that she does. But of course, I'm thinking, you know, part of the reason why she would is because she, that full handmaid experience is coming, you know, like it's just around the corner, really.
Yeah, all signs point to it.
But speaking of that, Sana, I am actually so grateful that we haven't seen so much of the horror that we've seen in the past. I've actually really appreciated that this season hasn't been about that.
Yeah.
Well, even to the extent of, like there was a rape and we saw the consequence of it, but it surprised us because we all thought it was just suggesting that there would be one to come. But Esther, like it was revealed in hindsight that that's what actually happened. So, yeah.
Which is a sign, right? Because you can just see the chocolate scene and that was hard enough to watch, wasn't it? Like that was just so awkward and so gross and sort of leaves you feeling icky afterwards. It did its work, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, totally. That's actually kind of brilliant the way they, did that.
Mm. And I did love the framing when Serena goes out for the quiet breastfeed out the back. Exit sign above her head. Hello, this way. Yeah. Neon lights.
Like it was super obvious, but I really loved it anyway.
100%. Yeah. She's going to go for it.
The only red we saw was the exit sign. Exit this way.
Yeah. It's like 1, 2, bye. And didn't go up the street. It was like, go up the street. But then had the close encounter with the Jeep. Thankfully, gets in and bolts around the corner.
I wondered if that driver woman clocked who Serena was, if she knew who she was and was like, fuck it, come in anyways. It's sort of, I don't know if I saw a little bit of recognition or something. Maybe I'm reading into that too much.
But. Yeah. Why was she driving past the Gilead Fertility Center? She can get the special pitch from the back seat. But
And look, as much as I wanted Serena to suffer a little bit longer, to be honest, really, before she got out, I was cheering for her in that moment. I was like, yeah, go, you know, stand in front of that car, you know, get in, go. Yes, Serena.
But hurry up.
Absolutely.
Hurry up. Because that door was alarmed. So, yes, they will be in hot pursuit, no doubt. But we've got I'm sure you guys have more to say about Nick because the next scene is the location with Nick.
Mm-hmm.
More to say on this one. The first shot of him is up the stairs having a smoke like their little love nest back in the day, very reminiscent of their upstairs boudoir.
I forgot about that.
But he was sitting in front of a closed door. Not an open door. So as soon as I saw him, I was like, okay.
The symbols. Yes, but he makes the point that he can't just pick up and leave, but Rose very much wants to stay. Her father is a top commander there and she's happy there. She is no Eleanor, guys.
No.
She doesn't mind.
Yeah, I can't trust a woman who, any wife who's like, this is great, you know. To live in a country where we rape lots of women.
Like it's
for
complicated,
babies.
Right? Because I assume she's got a whole family there.
It is complicated.
You know, we don't know anything about her. I don't know, you know, if she's got parents, siblings, how large her family is. So it's big call, especially if you're about to have a baby.
I get the impression she's lived a very privileged and sheltered life.
Yeah.
And hasn't really been exposed to a lot of the horrors of Gilead. We don't even know if she's been exposed to families with handmaids to any significant level. So, yeah, I get the impression she's just very sheltered in her experience of the Gilead world.
Yeah, there's no free press, right? And they also aren't allowed to read. So there is it is legitimately, we don't know like how much they actually know. And just like the guy that we met when Luke and June went into that no man's land,
he like he could sense that things weren't quite right. Like he thought that family should be together. But at the same time, Gilead's all he's known, well, really all that he remembers. And he wasn't that, you know, he was happy to stay. So I kind of get it. Like I kind of get why Rose wouldn't be looking for the parachute right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't say she's not aware. I mean, well, the fact that she has frank conversations with Nick and knows about June and her dad's a top commander.
Oh, you're right, actually. So, oh, my gosh, like I take all that back. Yes, yes.
Girl definitely knows handmaids exist. There's no way.
No, but she hasn't. Not that she doesn't know they exist, but she hasn't experienced firsthand or, you know, obviously not firsthand, sorry, but she hasn't, like, necessarily been in a household that has a handmaid, for instance.
Mm. Well, if she was a top commander's daughter, I wonder if they had a handmaid. You know, surely there would have been a handmaid hanging around there.
Because my assumption of how they've met was because Nick had all of those contacts in the resistance, you know, thinking way back in seasons when he would be at Jezebel's and he would be talking to the women working behind the scenes in like the kitchen area and stuff like that. He always had contacts. And so I had assumed that maybe he had met Rose that way, that she was someone who looks like a Gilead person, but was actually a resistor underneath. So, yeah, so now that I'm remembering that that's where I, that's in my mind how they have come together. God knows if that's true or not. Yeah, you're right. Like, I think that she does know those inner workings, horrible workings of Gilead. So, yeah, in that case, why is she staying? All right, okay, I've changed my mind.
Yeah, why does she like it? See, don't trust her.
And there's an interesting aspect to her character as well in that, and one of the wives makes a comment about this when they're talking about her pregnancy around, you know, is she concerned that the, you know, the child might have some genetic issues considering, which reminds me of those flashbacks we get of Gilead where you see people with genetic conditions being rounded up in cages and, you know, making assumptions that Gilead has a very kind of fascist stance on issues of genetics, which leads to the question of, you know, what kind of privileged space is Rose living in where that can be overlooked in her case? So, yeah, that's an interesting aspect to her character and I think points to her privilege within Gilead.
Yeah, I would agree. And that's Mrs. Calhoun, and that was Calhoun last week, whose name we couldn't quite remember, but, yeah, he's there as well. So that's, very shitty comment from her, I thought. But back to Nick and June, that scene, this is where he's saying...
Gilead's changing. There's progress under Lawrence. We're making it better.
And she catches the we.
Me?
I have to do whatever it takes to protect my family, just like you.
She very much could say back to him what she says to Lawrence about, you know, you're one of them and it's even worse because I know that you know better.
But to be fair, I think that she's reeling. She just got her second heartbreak, you know, like the moment when he said that Rose is pregnant. You could almost feel that, you know, that was like a gut punch, you know. So I think that she was properly reeling from that and probably was for a while.
Yes, that is a gut punch. I think you're right, the news that Rose is pregnant. But she's also still reeling from the shock that he said no to leaving, and all the more reason to leave when you are expecting, I think. Like in her head, it's like a compounding, why are you hanging around? So I think this scene is really interesting for their dynamic and what it might come to in the future because he's, you know, tell Nicole I love her. You know, he's clearly not thinking there's a future where he's ever going to see his daughter to be able to tell her himself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Nick Blaine, what's his story? He's very high up, rising through the ranks. I think where Lawrence we're seeing him hiding behind doorways and feeling that guilt. Nick, you know, he's starting out. Clearly, you know, he loves June. He's, you know, his heart is there, but it's also very much in Gilead with his wife and child on the way. Don't know about him.
Just how you see that as a better option than leaving if you can, I can't wrap my head. I mean, I understand some of his reasons, but I still just think, when you do the maths, why the hell would you not hit eject? Get out of there, Nick, unless you really believe or somewhat believe.
Going back to that conversation at the start of the season where Twello tries to get him to help, at the time Nick cites Mackenzie and, you know, other conservative commanders who have their eye on him and have their eye on Lawrence as one of the reasons that he's not ready to help, doesn't he? So I just wonder if maybe we're still a little bit unclear as to what his true feelings or his true position is, but he's being kind of pushed and pulled by those around him, by Rose, who wants to stay for whatever her reasons are, by maybe a fear of other commanders who are watching him and watching his moves along with Lawrence's.
I don't know, guys. Like, I just don't think that we've seen anything that would be enough to make me think that he is pro-Gilead. I think he's proven himself season after season after season.
I wouldn't say he's pro-Gilead. I mean, he's initiating airstrikes and, like, he's very much doing the bidding of Gilead. But I think he's like the frog in a saucepan, the water's heating up and all of a sudden the water's boiling. You know what I mean? Like, he's certainly there and he's certainly active, and to exactly the point that June makes to Lawrence, you know, like, it's even worse because I know that you know better. And, like, they're initiating these airstrikes against the American pilots. Like, there is collateral damage here.
I actually wonder if in some ways it's almost the opposite, in that I don't imagine he expects he's going to be living much longer, because people who are rising through the ranks in Gilead don't seem to have a very long lifespan. So he's trying to quickly make it as best for his child as he can, because he's probably not imagining that he'll be there for most of their childhood, is my grim take on, because Gilead's a very grim place.
Jeez, that went dark.
Yes. I do feel we're going to get some character deaths by the end of this season, whether it's Lawrence, whether it's Nick, whether it's, someone's going to be off.
And overall, this whole conversation, though, is really sort of finally putting an end to the relationship, isn't it? Like, she can finally move on from this, because Nick keeps being dangled in front of her, and they've had those lovely conversations on the phone in the past. But this is it now. This is now, he's got his wife, she's got her husband. They both say, I love you. They pretty much say goodbye. And now they're kind of done. Like, I feel like that relationship is done and leading to, as I was saying, like, that sort of rebirth of June, where she can now move on from this.
There's always been this dynamic that it's the love that couldn't be, that they can never be together in the right place and free to live their life as a couple. And this just felt like an extension of that. Maybe it's an end that would be nice and neat, but I feel like it's just an extension of this ongoing acknowledgement that they do love each other and will probably always love each other, but will never be together.
I feel like it's setting them up for some direct conflict.
Interesting.
That's interesting, because she's been set up with this conflict with Luke as well, right? Yeah, over the baby and breaking up the relationship between Serena and the baby. And there was a reason for her to kind of be horrified by Luke's actions as well. So is she sort of moving towards being alienated in a way from both the men she loved?
Yeah, I feel like with Luke, that's relationship tension. That's, you know, understandable. With Nick, this is, you know, real high stakes geopolitical tensions that I think are really ratcheting up here. Just like on a fundamental level, because he's saying, you know, he's doing for his family, and she's absolutely doing the same, but she makes the broader point, I want what's best for both our families, and, like, it's a higher aim. I just think the whole military symbolism across the episode, certainly the way it ends, bullets in the flag, they're bringing the fight.
Because there's clearly a June problem, which is putting the pressure on Joseph Lawrence. So I can see your scenario playing out, Fiona, that if June does step up to be more of a public force, whatever that looks like, that would just make life for Nick and for Joseph Lawrence difficult, because they're trying to make their changes, and as long as June is agitating in Canada, that would put them at direct odds, I think. So I can see that playing out.
Well, Mackenzie brings it in again, doesn't he? Like, his threat of we do need to nip that one in the bud. And the mention again of more allegiance is in this next scene with where they're all having the dinner of China, Russia and North Korea. I think it's great. The strikes,
Playing with the big boys.
Playing with the big boys now. Aren't you, Nick Blaine?
Did anyone notice the painting hanging above all the men when they were in that room chatting?
I must say I did not. What was it?
Well, I think it's a little bit dirty because it's a rose, but the bottom half is so shaded that it looks like the opening of a vagina. Like, you basically see labia, clitoral hood, all of it. That's all I could see was a giant vagina hanging.
Well, there is a Georgia O'Keeffe.
Going back now to look at that.
There is a Georgia O'Keeffe in Lawrence's house that's been there before. Yeah, it could be that one. We should have another look.
And a rose is like a symbol of a vagina, I think, right? Anyways, but that stood out to me in that scene.
That actually leads me to Naomi, because I was thinking she must have looked around at Lawrence's house and seen all of his eclectic furnishings and thought, oh, my God, I cannot live here. Like, that would have been her nightmare.
She's going to get in and redecorate.
Yeah, that man loves patterns. That room was drowning in overlapping patterns.
Yeah, it's very bohemian and artful. They've got the good sitting room, but, yeah, some, if the fact they're in that room, yeah, with the raunchy paintings or with the risque, shall we say.
Yeah, she'll be agitating for them to both move into the Putnam's old residence with its beautiful high ceiling.
Very much. Well-appointed and furnishings.
Pool. Much more minimalist, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so here's where Mackenzie congratulates Lawrence for his rise. Clearly there's a wedding probably coming with Naomi. Haven't seen a Gilead wedding, have we? Or have we seen one?
The group wedding with Eden.
That's right. But not like a big commander and a wife. Mm. Or a second marriage for both of them. We'll see what they do for second marriages.
When he put his hand on Naomi with the ring on his ring finger, from her expression, I didn't understand whether she had agreed to it and she was just seeing the hand being like, oh, I guess this decision's been made for me, shit, or whether she was like, shit, I've made this decision. This is my lot in life now. I couldn't understand what that look was saying.
Mm. I think either way, it's on.
I assume by her turning up for that dinner was her agreeing that, like, she had basically said yes to the proposal, and so that's why she was there. What I didn't understand was why Lydia was there.
Neither did Mrs. Calhoun.
Her chaperone.
But this is what confused me, because a single woman needs a chaperone, although I guess maybe a betrothed woman needs a chaperone too.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. I think it's just...
Okay, so she is engaged.
Yes. They're out on the town, such as it is in Gilead, at his house. But it does point, I think, to Lydia's rising influence, wink, wink, that, yes, she's being seen and she's in circles where she wouldn't normally be, as Mrs. Calhoun makes the comment, oh, we're inviting aunts now.
She's a little cheeky,
yeah,
that
little
one.
Snippy.
A little bit bitchy.
Yeah, well, hopefully she gets more lines next episode, next season. Yes, so anyway, Joe and Naomi, handsome couple. We'll see what what comes of that. But that's where Lawrence says,
I like to defy expectations.
And so you have. You're truly one of us now.
Praise be.
And Nick and he exchange glances. Yes, you are. Doesn't June know it? And then we're at the vigil, wrapping up this episode at the picketed memorial service with Elijah's widow and his daughter, Emma. Closing out all of the symbolism across this episode, the flag, June Osborne herself taking the pledge, helping Emma with that, pledging the allegiance. They don't get to finish the last line, which is liberty and justice for all. They got cut short by the gunshots from all the protesters, blaming them for the death of the soldiers. You can hear make out some of their shouting. They're saying the blood is on your hands and they died because of you, and their terrible placards, which are all a little bit familiar fonts.
So this, I assume, I guess the big question is who fired the bullets? Because we had just left that dinner party where they were saying that June problem needs to be solved.
Correct.
And next thing you know, she's a target. So do we assume that that was approved by Joseph, or do we think that was Ryan Wheeler's team going rogue?
Or was it a protester?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, it could have been just a stray bullet. I don't know. There's a lot of people that probably could point the finger at.
Yeah, that's what I was left wondering, was whether or not it was an assassination attempt or just some rogue bullets or bullets aimed at the flag, but not necessarily June.
Mm. I kind of side with the latter. I think it was, you know, some of the protesters maybe, because of the way June clutches Emma, and it's the same way that Serena was holding Noah when the Jeep nearly hit her. Like, they're both kind of shielding kids in. It's kind of a mirroring of that moment where, like, both were kind of, well, certainly with the Jeep, it was, would have been a freak accident. I don't know. I thought, oh, well, they're mirroring each other. They're both kind of the mothers protecting children. Don't know. What do we think?
Yeah, I think the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, assassination attempt. And then the second time I was like, oh, yeah, maybe it's just the chaos of the moment, because, you know, she's known, but how known is she among these Canadian protesters? But, yeah, I hadn't really thought that maybe it was something more organised from the Gilead side.
I thought it was just a mass shooting and sort of a nod to like the horrors of contemporary America, almost like interjecting with all the crap that makes Gilead horrible. Mm. To have this very contemporary example of the violence of America really shook me in a sense, because I was like, oh, okay, this is like an element of really real life currently that we're all familiar with.
Yeah. Mm. And I guess that pairs with the song with Janelle Monáe's Americans that plays over the top of that.
Yeah. You know, like Gilead is confronting. All the things we've seen and talked about are confronting, but for some reason the mass shooting element of this just really shook me, because I'm like, how many times do we see that headline happen over and over? In the most American of symbols possible at the end of the show, right?
That's right. Yeah, it
lays it all on. In the most depressing way.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So that rounds out episode 9. What did we learn today, and how are we going in to predict the season finale? How are we here already? I don't know, but
all right. I think my big question for everyone is, where is Serena going?
How far is that woman going to take her?
Good question. She's running to Luke in June's place.
I know.
He's a good man.
She's got her application in for New Bethlehem.
Right? Yeah.
first occupant.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, that was my thought.
I was joking, but now maybe I'm not.
Yeah, I guess she would be protected there.
I am still not going to put it beyond possibility that June will end up in New Bethlehem as well, because if that last scene was saying anything, it is that Canada is not safe.
Not as safe and free as she said to Joe. And no one else has been able to get Hannah for her.
And you can't help your child if you're not with your child.
But can she ever get Hannah? Wink, wink.
I'm going to chicken out and say I don't.
No. Let's go on the record with stupid ideas like we always do. Speaking for myself.
I thought it was really leading towards her becoming a symbol.
Yeah.
And I think the final straw is that if she is going to be the target of an assassination and she hasn't even spoken publicly really, then she might as well speak publicly. You know, her house is already getting targeted. So I think she actually is quite well known, especially within the community of people who care about Gilead and care about refugees. So why not? You know, like, she's burnt her bridges with Lawrence. She's wrapped up the relationship with Nick. She didn't get Hannah back. So now she's got to try something else. And this is the last thing she kind of has at the moment. So I'm assuming that, like, maybe next episode we see her stepping up to be a June that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, I think that's setting up for season 6 for sure. Yeah, I would concur with that.
I'm gonna go with that one too. I second that. I'm stealing yours.
Whereas with Serena, I just thought, like, God knows where she's actually heading. And I just thought, what if, this is how I think about Serena, which is, where is the one place I do not want her to go? Because that's probably where she's going to go. And she better leave Rita alone. You know, she turns up on Rita's doorstep, I'm going to be so annoyed.
That's a great point.
Yeah, we don't. Rita keeps assuring us how you know, anyone who listened, how much she's moved on. But yeah, we've had no glimpses of her or Moira. Yeah, let's have one of those. Mm-hmm.
And there was no Janine this episode either. I feel like we haven't seen her for a while.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a few episodes, hasn't it?
That's right.
It has.
And Esther.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'd love an update on what's going on at ART headquarters, ART HQ. Yes.
Well, Lawrence and Naomi will need a handmaid at some point, won't they?
Oh, my God.
Yes, maybe they get Janine.
Oh, yeah. What a trio.
So maybe we'll get a wedding. Maybe we'll get the wedding next episode.
Yes. Yeah. Let's yeah, rather than a death.
Wedding,
let's end
a funeral,
with
a
wedding.
A birth. We've got it all this season.
We'll take it. We have, actually, haven't we? All right. Well, there is literally only one way to find out. Thank you for listening. We hope that helped. We're off to go and eavesdrop on Ryan and Alanis' conversation in the car on the way home. That's going to be so awkward, and I wish I was there. Now we're just going to wait that lengthy wait for the fucking finale. It premieres on SBS On Demand Wednesday afternoon and screens on Thursday on SBS. And I want to thank my co-host, Sana Kadar, Natalie Hambly and Hayden Island for unpacking all of this with me. And thank you for listening. We cannot wait to hear what you think of this one and your theories for what the finale is going to bring. We've got one shot. We're moving to hear it. So reach out on Twitter. You can find me at anythingbutfifi and use that hashtag EyesOnGilead. It's how we find you. Where can we find you guys on Twitter? Sana, where are you?
At Sana_Kadar.
Hayden, where are you on Twitter?
At Hayden Island.
And Natalie, what about you?
At Natalie Hambly.
And use that hashtag. It's going off. There are some really great tweets coming in. Who's got one that they want to share?
I really liked a tweet from Catherine Powley, and she said, June and Lawrence keep pointing out that Serena can't seem to see the irony of her situation. And I just realised that Serena's captor is named after the very singer of Isn't It Ironic, Alanis, which made me think of Alanis Morissette's very famous song, because I imagine that Alanis Wheeler is now scratching her nails down someone else's back and hoping Serena can feel it.
Nice. Well played. I've got a good one actually from at Kate H. Merrigan, and she said, well, I didn't say because of this, but she said, love the pod and can't wait to listen every week to process these rich episodes. Thanks, Kate. And she said, thought on the garden shape at the end of episode 8. Remember, we're reflecting on the interlocking U's there. She said she saw the shapes and thought of broken chain links, and that connects back to the song and the lyrics of The Chain from episode 4.
Oh,
wow. That was very good.
Yeah, well,
nice. Well observed.
Yeah. And last one from me is Danielle from A Greenish Thumb, so clearly into gardening, was wondering what Hannah was planting, and she thinks it might be lavender, which she says represents purity, silence, devotion, serenity, grace, and calmness. Everything Gilead expects from a Gilead wife. Gross. Nice pickup.
Yeah, good. There's some great theories popping there. A lot of people live watch the show and tweet as they go. So get in there and have a conversation. It's great. So use that hashtag, Eyes on Gilead. And while we have you, feel free to leave a review for us and give us a rating on the podcast app you're listening to us from today. It helps other people to find the show. They might be watching Handmaids and not realising that they have their tribe here. So, yes, let them know. Eyes on Gilead is produced by me, Fiona Williams, and edited and mixed by Jeremy Wilmot. Until next time, the finale of season 5. Don't let the bastards grind you down. You don't own me. I'm not your property.
Good night, girls. Blessed dreams.
Good night, Aunt Paula.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.